This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. As we move into summer, gardeners across the state are starting to see the fruits of their labor. But experts warn that herbicides can cause issues even if you're not using them directly on your plot.
It's a huge impact on agriculture. We need it, but at the same time, we need to be very cautious.
That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Luke Frazier. Calls to poison control centers are more often resulting in hospitalizations and death, according to a new study by the University of Virginia. Brianna Heaney has more.
A new study has found that poison control centers are fielding more calls for severe poisoning over the last couple decades. The number of calls about intentional exposures, like suicide attempts and consumption of both legal and illegal drugs that resulted in death, is up nearly 250% for adults. For children, deaths associated with intentional exposures are up around 75%. Researchers say a combination of a mental health crisis and the opioid epidemic are major drivers of the increased number of deaths following a call to poison control. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brianna Heaney in Charleston, West Virginia.
West Virginia is eligible for a new round of abandoned mine land funds. As Curtis Tate reports, the state is one of the biggest recipients.
The U.S. Department of the Interior is making $140 million in AML funds available to West Virginia, the most of any state but Pennsylvania. A total of 22 states and the Navajo Nation will receive $725 million this fiscal year. In addition to West Virginia and Pennsylvania, Maryland, Virginia, Ohio, and Kentucky are included. The funds help clean up legacy mining sites, which can be a source of air and water pollution, a safety hazard, and a threat to the climate. Abandoned mines release methane, which is a more powerful heat-trapping gas than carbon dioxide. Projects funded through AML can revive local economies, put displaced miners back to work, and create lasting recreational opportunities. The program includes mines that were abandoned before 1977. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Curtis Tate in Charleston.
The Allegheny Front, based in Pittsburgh, is a public radio program that reports on environmental issues in the region. Here's their latest story about problems with dumping oil well wastewater on roads. The industry says it's keeping the dust down.
Spreading wastewater from conventional oil and gas drilling on dirt and gravel roads to keep dust down is a longtime practice in Pennsylvania, one that some say has to stop. This is the Allegheny Front Environment Update. I'm Carol Holsapel. Conventional oil and gas uses standard drilling practices, not fracking. David Hess, a former Department of Environmental Protection secretary, has been writing about this industry in his blog. He provided written testimony for an April state Senate hearing in favor of an outright ban on using this oil and gas waste on roads.
Dumping it on roads of any kind is technically illegal at this point, but that has not stopped the conventional well owners from dumping wherever they want.
He says the practice has been technically illegal since a 2018 challenge to DEP's approval process and the industry's failure to go through another process with regulators to have the waste approved for this use. Hess thinks it should remain illegal.
There really isn't any benefit for dumping it on the road. In fact, Dr. William Burgos, he's a professor at Penn State that has done a bunch of studies on what's in this kind of wastewater. He said at a PA Senate hearing in April that there really isn't any benefit at all for the public. He said the only benefit is to the people who own these conventional oil and gas wells because they get to get rid of their waste for free.
From your perspective, what are the potential health and environmental impacts?
There are upwards of 31 different chemicals and constituents in this kind of wastewater. They've done extensive testing on it. 25 of those chemicals exceed EPA, Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and other environmental standards for safety. And that includes for radioactivity. So you have a lot of stuff that's in this wastewater that's not good for the environment, good for aquatic life.
Because it washes off of these roads into waterways.
Well, the wastewater washes off the roads. It also, if they dump it on dirt and gravel roads, particularly dirt roads, it has a tendency to break up those roads. It makes that road generate more dust, according to the Penn State studies. So it's not even doing what the well owners say they want to prevent.
What's happening now in the state legislature over this issue?
Well, the Senate had the first ever hearing on the issue on April 17th. In the House, we see Representative Vitale, who's the majority chair of the House Environmental Committee, announced his intent to introduce a bill to ban this practice of wastewater dumping. And almost about 20 minutes after Representative Vitale sent his memo out, Representative Causer, who's from Cameron County and a huge supporter of the conventional oil and gas waste industry, he announces an intent to introduce a bill to legalize road dumping of this wastewater. So the issue is certainly one that's being discussed in the House and the Senate. Meanwhile, DEP is looking at revising its regulations for waste handling in the conventional oil and gas industry. And we'll have to see whether they ultimately propose to ban it like they did with the shale gas industry. And we may know more on that in October, according to what the department said when they come out with some of their ideas on how they want to change the regulations.
David Hess is a former DEP secretary. We reached out to two groups representing the conventional oil and gas industry, but have yet to receive a response. That's the Allegheny Front Environment Update. I'm Carol Holsapple.
The Allegheny Front is based in Pittsburgh and reports on regional environmental news. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:51. Rain this morning, clearing later today with highs in the 70s and 80s. Tonight, a chance of rain and thunderstorms in the south, low temperatures in the 50s and 60s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, highs in the 70s, 60s, and 70s. Support for WVPB is provided by the Morgantown Farmers Market, with fresh produce, meats, eggs, and local farm products Saturday mornings through fall on Spruce Street in downtown Morgantown. Information at MorgantownFarmersMarket.org. With temperatures heating up and spring showers moving in, this is a busy time of year for gardeners. But as Chris Schultz reports, experts are warning gardeners and farmers to be more aware of the mulch and organic material they add to their soils.
Jim Rye loves to garden. A Monongalia County Master Gardener, he's been doing it for close to 40 years and extols its virtues not just for the fruits and flowers it yields, but also for its educational benefits.
I would like to see more schools making room for school gardening as a means to teach.
It even lays a foundation, he says, for a future career in biology or environmentalism, which is why a few years ago, Rye was devastated to see that something was wrong with the tomatillos he was helping a Morgantown elementary school grow.
The leaves were curling. Some of the leaves looked like cups. I'm pretty familiar with tomato, and it just didn't look right to me. Just didn't look right.
Rye is fairly certain the damage came from grass clippings that were donated to the garden by a school family and used as mulch. He believes the clippings had been treated with an herbicide to suppress weeds, something he had specifically warned against, and suspects the herbicide then seeped into the soil to ultimately damage the tomatillos. Mahfouz Rahman is a plant pathology extension specialist and the director of the West Virginia University Plant Diagnostics Clinic. He says the damage Rye describes is typical of herbicide contamination.
People are using those to control weeds in their fields, in their farms, in their backyard, and also controlling invasives. It's a huge impact on agriculture. We need it, but at the same time, we need to be very cautious.
Rahman says herbicides can linger on grass clippings or hay from lawns and fields for years. Once contaminated material is applied to a plot, the soil becomes contaminated too.
If they see something showing symptom of herbicide contamination, they can definitely, you know, not use that compost in the same year. But if they can keep that compost for another couple of years, most of the active ingredients there can be degraded. So after that period of time, it can be safe for them to use.
Rahman says herbicide contamination and damage has been an issue as long as the treatments have existed, but they do seem to be on the rise in recent years. Since 2019, state extension programs across the country, from Washington to North Carolina, have started publishing warnings to gardeners and farmers to be careful, not only when using herbicides, but also when using materials that have been treated with herbicides. Rahman published his own Ag Alert for West Virginians in April of 2023. He theorizes the increase in contamination is due in large part to two issues: longer growing seasons causing more weeds to grow, as well as the easier access to these chemicals.
These products are getting more and more available in the local stores. If you don't want to go to the store, just go online and place an order. It will be in your doorstep in 2-3 days.
On top of that last point, Rahman says the issue boils down to misuse. He says oftentimes the homeowners and agricultural workers that contact him do not fully understand the products they use, or accidentally cross-contaminate by using the same sprayers for herbicide and insecticide.
The toxicity of these products to humans is very low. But the most important thing is, when you are buying these products, once again, you have to follow the label. On the label, it says how to use it. After using, how many days you should not harvest, or you should not enter into the treated area.
Rakesh Chandran is a professor and extension specialist of weed science at WVU. He agrees with Rahman that it is the herbicide user's responsibility to use the product safely and understand the full impact of what they're doing.
So for example, there are a few herbicides whereby it specifically states on the label, do not move the hay or any clippings outside the farm. In other words, all the hay should stay within the farm where it was treated.
The damage to rice tomatillos could have been avoided if someone had just read the label. Chandran said it can be difficult to pinpoint what he calls non-target damage caused by herbicides. Chandran and Rahman both suggest conducting what is called a bioassay to confirm contamination.
You take some of that mulch and mix it, sow some sensitive seeds, cucumber or peas. After 2 or 3 weeks, once it germinates, if it shows any signs of distorted growth, then that's an indication that herbicide residues are present. And to confirm that, have a control.
On a small scrub field on WVU's Animal Science Farm in Morgantown, weeds have been allowed to grow freely. Here, Chandran has treated two patches. One lacks the thistles and tall weeds of the surrounding field, but still has clovers and some other plants growing. The other is yellowed and dry, with almost no life.
So this is typically the kind of injury that you would see in a garden. It would show exactly this type of injury due from herbicide residues. Whereas the new herbicide that we are developing, you don't see those type of injuries.
Chandran is developing the next generation of herbicides, one he hopes will be even more focused on truly damaging plants and leave beneficials like clover and the unsuspecting tomatillo alone. But even once the new stuff hits the market in a few years, it will still be worthwhile to read the label. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Chris Schultz in Morgantown.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Liz McCormick, and Maria Young. Chris Schultz produced today's show. I'm your host, Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Morning.